you're going to need to be able to very quickly, not day to day, but almost like minute to minute, hour to hour, be able to shift from thinking high level, thinking about outcomes, being that kind of strategic visionary, and then quickly pivot, you know, kind of swivel chair to execution. How many times has your marketing team, your sales team come to a, you know, come to a pipeline meeting, and then the first thing is that the pipeline numbers don't match, right? And for the CS team, I think kind of back to your point about being aligned, having your CS team carry a net dollar retention or net revenue retention number to me makes so much sense. What I often see happens is initially when they start thinking about RevOps, they potentially hire, like I'm sure you've seen as well, a Salesforce admin or CRM admin. And then all of a sudden they get to a certain stage where we need more. Okay, now switch their title. Now you're head of RevOps. And the person in the role is like, okay, I'm not, you know, I don't have the business acumen to run a revenue operations function. We're not going to say, oh, we won these deals, but we can point to the fact that by implementing this process, here's our baseline. We improved efficiency by 1%, whatever. We increased, you know, we participated and contributed to driving a shorter deal cycle by Y, right? Whatever those numbers are. Sure, there's other factors that come into play that helped also, but you need to be able to have some of those tangibles to be able to share. You know, less about balance and more about harmony, right? We talk about work-life harmony a lot because it will never be 50-50.
In this episode, I interview Rosalind Santa Elena. She's the founder of the Revenue Operations Collective. And throughout the discussion, we talk about the strategic imperative for companies to invest in RevOps early, the nuances of influencing without authority as RevOps professionals, and the common pitfalls encountered in forming a new RevOps function. One of my favorite parts of the discussion is when we talk through how to navigate personality conflicts and achieve alignment amidst strong personalities. We also get into optimizing two critical handoffs in the business, sales to CS and CS to marketing, where we should be closing the loop. Toward the end, Rosalind offers some really good advice on how to effectively communicate your contributions and value to the business as a RevOps professional. Rosalind, we were talking offline about RevOps in a lengthy way. And one of the things that stood out to me was your point about investing into RevOps, revenue operations, sooner. As a lot of companies wait to the last minute to do this, why do you think strategically it's important that companies think about investing into RevOps sooner?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is probably one of the questions I get asked the most. It's like, when is the right time? And my answer is always the sooner the better, right? And when I say that, it doesn't mean that you have to hire a full-blown like VP of RevOps and build out a 20-person team, right? It means that you start thinking about RevOps, you get in the right revenue operations mindset, and you start to build some building blocks, right, for revenue operations. So what do I mean by that, right? It's about thinking about when you have a process and you want it to be repeatable, you want it to be scalable, right? And ultimately, when your business starts to mature, you want it to be predictable too, right? But early stage, lots of change, lots of things going on. But the sooner you can start to lay out that foundation for getting the right information, having some of those processes, getting your tech stack at least started in the right direction, it will pay off in spades later down the road. Because I've seen so many organizations invest too late in revenue operations. And then they have to spend all of this time not just iterating or building, but actually tearing things down because they weren't.
Unwinding the ball of string, as I think you've
Ex
referenced it in many other interviews.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, literally having to tear down so much of what you've built and then have to rebuild from scratch at a time when it's likely that you're in a high growth,
You want to hit the
high growth
accelerate
stage.
button, but you can't. So you got to take 6 months to unlearn or undo what's
Yes.
been, Frankenstein effectively.
Yeah, absolutely. So the sooner the better, invest, start building a foundation so that you can get some repeatability. You can start to actually see what's happening in your business, which is another big aspect of investing in RevOps early, is being able to actually see what's happening instead of what's in your face, actually be able to be proactive and see what's coming down the road and kind of
Go
the what's
figure.
working and what's not. Yeah, absolutely.
Imagine being in that state where you could actually plan a quarter, 2 quarters, a year, two ahead of schedule. Like we probably want to. I mean, at the essence of strategic planning. But, I like the point about unlocking strategic opportunities like that, the visibility around the corner, to be actually in a more strategic state if you and earlier when you're trying to scale. I mean, revenue operations and sales operations, as we try to muddle the waters a lot, and we'll clarify some of that. But I think it's one of those roles I see a lot where they postpone as long as possible and then they narrow the
Yes.
focus to the tech stack. So the thing that I'd like to hear your point on, though, is the strategic decision making
Right.
ability. I've asked this question in other interviews around, enablement leaders being at the board level discussions, same with revenue operations. It seems that the authority is not where it could be when you think about revenue operations, owning the go-to-market motion, and making sure that from a data standpoint, visibility, all these things are all humming together. You'd think that there'd be more authority given to the RevOps person in some respects, or team, I should say. So, talk to me about your concept of influencing without a lot of authority. I know that's a big factor for professionals in that space.
No, that's great. And I think it kind of goes back to the fact that companies invest too late or don't invest enough in revenue operations. So then the function naturally becomes this reactive, firefighting, supporting, admin, right? All the different words that a lot of times you'll hear revenue operations being described, but everybody says we don't want that. We want them to be that strategic, sort of differentiator in the business, but we're not willing to invest in it, right? Or we're not willing to hire the right level of leadership and the right level of skill set for that role. And so what I often see happens is initially when they start thinking about RevOps, they build, they potentially hire, like I'm sure you've seen as well, a Salesforce admin or CRM admin. And then all of a sudden they get to a certain stage where we need more. Okay, now switch their title. Now you're head of RevOps. And the person in the role is like, okay, I'm not, I don't have the business acumen to run a revenue operations function. My focus is here, like in the CRM. And so what happens is then you hire for, kind of the barely, like it's always a one of those functions that people just hire retro, kind of too late, but then they
Bare
also
bones.
hire bare bones, right? They try to, it's often viewed as that administrative type of function or cost center, right?
Absolutely.
Versus trying to really be strategic about the role. And so what happens is the role doesn't elevate to where it needs to be.
Right, because they're reactive to your point. Yeah, they're not making strategic recommendations in the business the way that we really want that partner to be. If I'm the CEO, if I'm the CRO, I really want my operations person to really be able to see what I can't see and help me operationalize things that I didn't even think were probably feasible. And you're right, they get cornered. And as in the function that I've operated in the past, particularly, inside sales, so sales management, you find a lot of times, especially in sales development management, where you have to really develop more operational chops, because not only are they bare bones in terms of the team, but their focus really ends up lending towards late stage funnel, right? And trying to lend time and energy to an SDR team at the top of the funnel is sort of the B tier or two, second tier in terms of priorities. And so how we compensate in the business is people have to have better operational chops, particularly around the tech stack and financial modeling and data analysis and these things. So it's interesting to see that we understand that RevOps owns that go-to-market and that full spectrum of revenue, and allows us to hit that accelerate button and scale, but then we don't make the investment. It's like IT and HR and all these teams where it's invested into as minimally as possible to let the business run. And when it could be the opposite, right? Could unlock a lot of potential is kind of the message I think we're sending here.
100%. I think a lot of times it is either they underinvest in the resource count or in the level of experience, right? They're expecting, executive level, VP level kind of presence and expertise, but they want to hire at a manager level, for example. And the
Someone who can
manager
roll
level.
their sleeves up and actually do some of the implementation. But
And so the challenge with our ops roles is always, this is something that I coach a lot on, is around trying to be, because our roles are very strategic, but also very tactical, right? Especially in a high growth startup type of environment, you're going to need to be able to very quickly, not day to day, but almost like minute to minute, hour to hour, be able to shift from thinking high level, thinking about outcomes, being that kind of strategic visionary, and then quickly pivot, kind of swivel chair to execution, right? I always talk about kind of thinking about understanding what the goal is and then immediately breaking that down into these digestible parts on how we're actually going to execute upon those. I actually used this example this morning with a chief revenue officer around playing chess, right? Like a good RevOps leader is really good at chess and all those pieces, they can see the entire board, see what's happening, anticipate what the other, the other people are going to be doing, and then maneuver and manage all of these pieces in the right direction, in the right order
Right.
to drive that outcome. And I think that's a skill set that you accumulate, or I guess you start to grow into over time. And so when you hire somebody who's, maybe 4 or 5 years into their career, even 10 years into their career, you sometimes put them in an unfair position by asking them to do a lot of these other things that they just haven't had a chance to do, right? They just don't have the experience, which is why coaching is really
And
important.
you maybe
It's
didn't have the
trying to.
wherewithal to vet for that in your interviewing and hiring process, because I heard
Exactly.
you in another interview say, and you were talking about the skills that are often overlooked when it comes to being an expert in revenue operations. And so often we get hung up in the technical aspect of things when business acumen definitely rings up on that list of things that are other skills that we should focus on. But the one that I just heard there was the project management, change management skill set that we don't delve into probably very much when we're interviewing, scoping the job in terms of ideal candidate profile and those sorts of things. So not only, are we expecting them to do something that they weren't hired for, we may not have even scoped for that in the hiring
Yeah,
process.
100%. And that kind of goes back to your comment about the influencing without authority. And that's something I talk a lot about because I think our ability in any leadership role and really in any cross-functional role, but probably more important than ever in this revenue operations leader, is to have that ability to influence others cross-functionally to drive that alignment, drive advocacy, and to your point, drive change. Because it's about bringing everybody along, keeping everybody aligned in terms of where we're trying to go, but bringing them along the journey. And that doesn't mean consensus, because oftentimes you'll never have consensus, but you want buy-in, right? You want advocacy, you want champions, people who understand where we're trying to go and they're on board to get there. But how do you influence without authority, right? You need to have business acumen. You need to understand the business and the customer better than anybody else, right? And you need to understand each of the different teams, whether it's sales and marketing or your sales development partners, right? Everybody in go to market, but also finance and legal and HR and product and even engineering. In some of these earlier companies, you have to understand where they're trying to go, what their objectives are, what's important to them, what do they value, and then figure out how do we collaborate and drive that alignment across all of these functions. And that's not easy, right? That's not an easy thing to do when you have so many different personalities, right, and moving parts and stakeholders. But that is sort of the one of the biggest wins, I think, when you have strong revenue operations, is you have those folks who are taking the step back, looking at the entire customer life cycle, from a holistic perspective, people, process, tech, but also data, insights, enablement, and strategy, and really understanding, again, kind of that chessboard analogy of all the moving parts and how do you move everybody, sort of in harmony, in sync together?
Well, I love your point about the personality piece, and actually brings me to a point that I wanted to ask your opinion on, because we talk about alignment a lot when we talk about revenue operations and its core objectives and these sorts of things. And let me take a quick step back as well. When we were in our planning, for those that are listening, there were five key areas that Rosalind listed off that were huge for revenue operations in 2024. We had a great planning discussion, and I distilled it down to these five things. Number one, optimization. Number two, customer retention and expansion. Number three, better alignment. Number four, better handoffs across teams. And number five, clearer rules of engagement. So I want to talk about better alignment real quick, since you mentioned that and you mentioned personalities. You've operated in a state of alignment, quote unquote, right? A lot of times it's an aspirational state that companies are trying to get to, or they want to be aligned, but you've operated in that state. So when we think about personality conflicts and how they affect alignment, how do you account for that? How do you navigate those waters? Because it's easy to, not easy, I should say, but you can align objectives and you can align compensation. There's a lot of things you can do, get clear about data. But the hard part, I feel like, is getting in the room with people and addressing the personality conflicts. A lot of times they avoid each other if we have strong leadership personalities, right? So how have you navigated those waters?
And one of the things around, obviously, when you're trying to drive change or you're trying to drive that alignment across the teams, and it's interesting because you said, you've kind of worked in that state, but that state can quickly get disrupted as
Good
well,
point.
right? I just wanted to point that out. And so it's a constant, it's an ever, constant mission to keep everything aligned because it can very easily, market ch changes, leadership changes, right? Just any kind of new product launch, right, could easily throw everything sort of
Very good
into a
point.
misalignment state again. But I think when you're working with different personalities, because one of the things I've learned very early on in my career, and partially from leading teams, but also from being a parent, is I think every person, how they respond is going to be different, right? What they value, what's important to them, how they want to be communicated with and to is going to be different. So that's where sort of this EQ and kind of being able to influence without authority really comes into play. I mean, that is your superpower if you're good at this role, where you can really articulate and communicate to each individual in the way that is going to provide the best outcome, right? That you're going to be able to provide that messaging and they're going to understand, it's going to resonate with them and they get it, right? Then they're going to buy into this alignment. And everybody's different, right? To your point about personality. One of the things that, just as you were talking about that comes to mind to me is when you have different personalities, and let's say you're going to bring everybody together for a meeting, and there's going to be some contention, right? There's going to be some hot topics, and as you get to know your stakeholders,
And
what
sometimes that's good for
buttons.
business. We're not saying everybody should always get along and always see things the same
Absolutely.
way. Right.
Absolutely. But you want to be that enabler of healthy dialogue, right? Healthy debate. And so one of the things that I like to do just from a leadership perspective, when you're working on something that is probably going to be a little emotional, right, is you want to diffuse that through good communication. And what I mean is, if I'm having a conversation, let's say with CFO, CMO, CRO, let's just say those three folks, and maybe your
Some powerful
product
personalities
officer,
in the room there.
right? Right. So you have different personalities and you're going to talk about something that has been, I don't know, let's just pick like compensation or something, because that's usually a hot
Very
topic,
charged.
right? Right. When you're talking about sales company, it's kind of top of mind, I think, for a lot of folks at the, in the beginning of the year, first half of the year. And so one of the things that I like to do, and I think all RevOps should be doing, is spending the time talking and having these one-on-one conversations with each of your stakeholders, right? Letting them know, hey, this is the topics, here's what we're going to talk about, and trying to diffuse a lot
To
of the
prime the
emotion.
conversation a bit.
Exactly. You want to diffuse the emotion. You want to understand what are going to be sort of those points that are going to be really things that, those buttons, right? The things that they're going to feel really passionate about. But it also gives you an opportunity to have that discussion in a very kind of non-contentious, very like fact-finding feedback. How can I help you get your point across and make sure that your position is heard and understand that? So you can diffuse a lot of that. And then you're also able to, as let's say your CFO is bringing up concerns about budget, I don't know, I'm just bringing things up around comp, then you can have that dialogue and help bring him or her along the conversation. Same thing when you're meeting with your marketing or your sales officer. So when you actually come into the room, you've already discussed, all the hot topics. People's emotions have already been removed. They've already had an opportunity, one, to be heard and share their concerns. Two, for you to have given them enough information to hopefully mitigate any conflict around some of those items. And then you're coming to the table prepared to just talk about the things that are going to be the big blockers that you want to discuss. And from a RevOps perspective, a lot of times you're also preparing those executives to come to the conversation, right? Like if I'm talking to my CRO, I'm saying, hey, our CFO is going to be really passionate about this. So what do you think? This is how we're going to address it in the
Back of
conversation,
that
right?
chess board analogy, and you're giving them a whispering of in their ear a bit.
100%, right? And the same thing with your CFO. You're like, look, I get what you're saying, but here's what's going to be really important to my CRO. So let's come to conversation about that. And then we can really not just drive a lot of that alignment to have the right conversation, but you're also focusing your time with all these stakeholders in the room on the decisions that you really need to make, right? So that it doesn't get, because the worst thing is you come to a meeting and it totally gets sidetracked, it gets hijacked, railroad, whatever you want to call the term, right? But we've all been in those meetings, right? We come, we think we have this agenda planned, we have this great structure for the meeting, and the first comment out of the gate throws everything off, right? And so that's what you really want to diffuse, I think, a lot of times. But understanding what they value, how they like to be communicated to, working with the data, right? Bringing the information ahead of time. So preparing everybody for the conversation. And that also drives the advocacy and just the rapport that you have, right? When you're
Absolutely.
working with finance, for example, they know, hey, they see you as a partner, somebody who's collaborating with them and wants to come, to
You're
the
the
table with the
guide. I
right
mean, you are
outcome.
guiding
Exactly.
everybody through these choppy waters.
Yeah,
No, I love
exactly.
that. Yeah, that's a great analogy of the chessboard, and I love the example of compensation amongst these figureheads, right? Definitely can be a charged topic, but what point you've made in the past, and we'll move on from the alignment idea, but is having that data be in unison, right? Where do you have everybody operating from the same set of data? That is a attribute of being in an aligned state, is
State.
that you come to meetings and you're not arguing over whose data is correct and accurate. You've made this point in other interviews, and it's been talked about, but that's the essence, I think, that allow where the trip up happens a lot of times, is right there on the data.
I think I'm probably shared that analogy or that example with you, right? How many times, and every time I say this to anybody, it's like, how many times has your marketing team or your sales team come to a pipeline meeting, and then the first thing is the pipeline numbers don't match,
Right?
right?
Exactly. It's just
Exactly.
this thing. Yeah.
Exactly. Then you spend the entire time together instead of discussing how you're going to drive more pipeline or improve the pipeline, you spend all the time digging around comparing numbers, right?
Yeah. And then you start looking at your project list, and then these lists of tasks have to do with getting better data instead of getting to the strategic outcomes that you're trying to, march towards. So, another item on your list of five things that were really hot for 2024 from a RevOps lens was better handoffs in the organization. And I thought that was definitely one that we don't hear enough about. And one that we hear a lot about is the marketing to sales handoff, or the sales SDR to, sales handoff. That has been talked about, and we put a lot of effort and investment there. Where we're underinvested is in the sales to CS handoff. You made that point clear to me. So what can we do to strategically align these teams from objectives, compensation, data? What's missing in that respect? We already know that it's a terrible experience for a customer to have to start over again once they've been handed off, but what can we do to align these teams better for better sales to CS handoffs?
Definitely. I'm glad you bring this one up because I do think there's a lot of focus on marketing to sales, and everybody talks about that, right? Or SDR to AE, for example. But in SaaS, especially in SaaS, right? When, and I say this a lot, but it's, when that customer or that prospect first signs their first contract with you and becomes a customer, ideally, that's just the start of the journey, right? And so that's where that post-sales handoff, whether it's to services, implementation, to customer success, it has to be frictionless as well, right? It has to be the same, even better experience than when they came top of funnel and kind of into your customer journey. And so I think about the fact that oftentimes we don't bring CS into the picture soon enough,
Agreed.
right? So when a sales team is about to close a deal, a lot of times you see that where they're done with the deal, we've hit the gong, we're celebrating, and then it's like, okay, now let's which person on the CSM team is going to handle this account? And they're scrambling to do that. Meanwhile, the customer is so excited because they just signed, they're about to pay you, or maybe they already sent a check, and then now it gets stalled, right? Worst customer experience
Yep.
ever. Right. And so I think bringing the CS team sooner, but not just into the deal sooner, but also ensuring that during the sales cycle, you're capturing all of the data points that you need to do that better handoff in the CRM, in a place where CS can actually have
So they
visibility.
can be alerted earlier on. So to the point of like
Exactly.
bringing them in early shouldn't be this thing that the salesperson has to do every time necessarily. It can be
Exactly.
triggered mid-funnel through gating fields and things that are happening that were triggering the CRM mid-stage. Oh, we just exited a POC. It went successfully. We're going to proposal. CS, heads up, here's your email notification. So that's automating that is what you mean, right?
Right, exactly. Automating that and then providing that transparency, right?
Love that.
Providing that information to the CS team, but also having really clear in terms of account assignments, like who are we actually handing off to, right? We've seen that on top of funnel where leads are coming in and then they don't get routed properly, right? So hot leads go cold. It's the same thing with your customers, right? You want to be able to ensure that you have really good, kind of books of business, like where are these new accounts going to be going, and then make sure that that team has line of sight to the deals that are coming, that are about to cross the finish
Absolutely.
line so
Absolutely.
that they can get involved early. And then there should be a process around how does the customer get introduced, right? How does the salesperson do that handoff properly, not just from a data perspective, because to your point, should be all automated and captured in your systems, but also the conversation, like what happens in that first call? What's the cadence for those calls? Similar to an outbound sequence, right? You should have a sequence
Spot
for
on.
how that customer gets onboarded. And then keep the salesperson involved up to a certain point in that cycle. It's not just a simple like handoff, handshake, and then they walk away because
See you
they,
later. Good
yeah, see you
luck.
later, off to the next. But I think because they have the relationship with the customer, right? And they've already built that trust and
Well,
rapport,
sometimes
you
it's
want to
not the
leverage
same
that.
person though, right? The person who bought isn't always the same person who implements. So
Exactly.
naturally that handoff has to take place just from that standpoint, I would imagine as well.
Yep, 100%. And then whether your account executive continues to handle, expansion or growth within the account, or if you have your like an account management team or whomever is doing that, or renewals team, you want to make sure all those folks are involved and have the right information.
And that's what I mean
Because
right there is the who handles what, the rules of engagement post sale, right? Do we strap the salesperson? Do you see it successful where the salesperson is strapped with renewal quota for the first year, as an example, where CS then is strapped with the renewal quota for year two, but in the handoff, there are certain milestone KPIs that CS has to hit that are customer driven, so they actualize value, these sorts of things, right? So we continue the high touch process, because what I see happen a lot is that we're very high touch pre-sale and we get the transaction completed, and then we want to move customers into a low touch model, self-serve if it's a small account in some cases, which doesn't align with the experience that they had leading up to that point. So do we Is it a, is there a, is there a compensation model or a KPI model you've seen work that locks this in?
So I definitely think, in the CS kind of post-sales world, so I've done models where the customer success team is simply outside of the commercial aspect, right? So they are truly usage value driving success, literally for the customer around realizing, kind of calculating their ROI, making sure that they're hitting those goals and KPIs that why did they actually buy, right? And making
Right,
sure that
right.
they're successful in that criteria, and then keeping more of a sales, commercial lens with your account management team, for
Got it.
example, who may be responsible for expansions as well as, kind of net dollar retention, or as we're calling now, net revenue retention, in terms of, growing the account. And for the CS team, I think kind of back to your point about being aligned, having your CS team carry a net dollar retention or net revenue retention number to me makes so much sense, right? Even if they're not the ones that are sharing the paper and doing the proposal of the commercial terms, because I like to keep the CSM with kind of the halo effect, where
Right.
right, where they are truly that customer's kind of
Evangelist.
partner. Yeah, exactly. And so if you do that, but if they're doing their jobs right, we should see the account grow. Right. At a minimum, they should remain the same. We shouldn't lose them or
Right.
down, they shouldn't
Net
downsell.
positives. Yeah.
Yeah, and so I think having the two teams, kind of your account management or whoever's ex responsible for expansion, along with your CS team, whoever's responsible for adoption, value, growth, to be aligned in terms of comp, right? Having some type of shared KPI, shared responsibilities, ideally shared quota in some respect. And then that also helps that partnership, right, work
I hope
better
so. That's
because
the theory. Yeah. And it's, yeah.
The other thing I also see with the CS team is really helping them. They can be a big part of identifying opportunity, right, for growth because they see the white space. They see when, if they see their customer, they're hiring more or they're using more or they're, growing, they just, whatever changes that are
Or
happening in
just
the business.
expressing interest organically in their engagements that, while they're working on product A, they're expressing pain around an area that could be supported by product B, and the client doesn't even know, but the CS person does. And then this gets into the age-old debate of sales engineers or solution architects, as well as CS people and their sales acumen, right? And identifying those opportunities and elevating them or actioning them. A lot of times, we attribute that to sales acumen. I don't know if maybe just the KPIs are a way to address for that, but maybe there's an opportunity there.
Definitely. I mean, I think we just don't leverage, especially in SaaS. I see a lot of organizations just not leverage that customer information. I mean, customer information is gold,
Exactly,
right?
exactly.
And I think a CS, if you have a process to gather that feedback, that's just part of your ongoing cadence of your CSMs that I to identify, right, white space and opportunities. If that's kind of part of your rules of engagement, as you mentioned, or part of your process, then it just becomes natural that when they're having these conversations, they have a process and a vehicle to provide that communication back to the sales team. And one of the things, I don't want to, I know you have other topics you want to talk about, but one of the other handoffs that I see not happen enough is imagine CS providing information about the customer back to your marketing team. Right. And helping them
Closing the loop.
understand. Yeah, you need to close that loop because think about from a marketing perspective, understanding which customers actually closed, which expanded, why did they buy, how are they using the product? How are they seeing success? All that is like gold for
Yeah,
messaging
value
and top of mind.
creation. I mean, this
Yep.
is, yeah.
It's 101, right? It's kind of
Yeah.
like sales 101, but it's all that information that then they can refine their ICP, have better
Absolutely.
messaging for their better storytelling for their
Modify
sales
pricing and
team.
packaging. Yeah.
Exactly. There's so much gold in there, but I see a lot of that not happening
Oh, no,
too.
I
And
love that you
customer
made that point.
referrals.
It's been huge for me in a lot of my interviews and even in engagements. And it blows my mind how lack of feedback that we're and the flawed feedback, right? Relying on data in our CRM exclusively to inform this stuff when we know inherently it can be off or skewed. And not factoring in actual customer feedback. And then when we do factor in customer feedback, we have these lame surveys that don't have aren't asking the right questions. And so we're not getting the right information to then close that loop. And then when you ask, when's the last time that you re-informed your messaging? When's the last time that you made modifications to anything in your process based on customer inputs? You kind of get, the deer in the headlight effect, right? So, yeah, closing the loop, and it's at the essence of optimization, right? You mentioned in your top five, that's number one is optimization. So, re-informing all of your processes through these win-loss analysis, persona analysis, TAM analysis, all these strategies that are informing us overall. So, yeah, I think you hit a hot button for me with that. I do want to segue because there's an important part of this interview that I really want to get to. For those that are listening, today is March 1st, and today is the first day of Women's History Month. And I would be remiss if I didn't first take a step back and acknowledge Rosalind for her incredible contribution to the space of revenue operations, sales, go-to-market. And for those that, again, that are listening, this has been 20 plus years of a career that she's grown. And I was doing some research, and one thing that Rosalind does a really good job of is opening up in her social media posts. So if you go to LinkedIn, you look at her past posts, she talks about family, she talks about being a working parent quite a bit. So I wanted to make sure today, of all days, that we acknowledge you as a
Thank
woman
you.
in sales and leadership that are guiding this, giving you that voice. But also, giving your flowers for being a working parent for all these years. And that brings me to a question that I wanted to ask you.
Yeah.
You've raised three kids. They're all in their 20s now, I believe, if
I still
I'm
have one teenager, which is
okay.
my daughter, which is,
There you
yeah,
go.
that's a whole nother episode to
I'm
talk
right there with you. I have three
about.
daughters myself. They're and my youngest just hit 20 last month. So I think we're neck and neck in that respect. But yeah, that's another reason why it's really materially important to me. So one thing I wanted to ask you around this was, the how have you been able to manage your career while raising kids, being a working parent, being a leader, which we all know is very stressful and demanding? How have you made this balance, and how do you think you've navigated it differently from your male counterparts? And the second part of this question is, how do you think those career choices have influenced your kids' career choices?
Great question. So first of all, thank you for the recognition. I appreciate that.
Absolutely.
I definitely do think that because my sons are older, it was a time when, we were still, I mean, when my kids were first born, I think I first became in a leadership position when I had, I think my oldest son was three and my younger son was a baby, like literally like 2 or 3 months old. And I think, at that point in time, it was kind of a decision like, oh, do I take this promotion and become a leader with a toddler and an infant
Right.
in tow, right? And back then, and you'll remember this, but we were just debating on whether women should even work outside of the home, much less, how do you juggle and how do you balance? I remember there's so many debates about how if children are, go to daycare, they're going to be, damaged for life and all of these things,
Right. They need,
right?
yeah.
It's a very, very different environment. And I think the last couple of years, especially with the pandemic and people working from home, people got a really, eye-opening
Right.
experience in terms of what working parents are actually doing behind the scenes every day.
Right.
Some of that juggle, right?
Yeah, they
Even
by
pet
force.
parents.
Yeah. The dad that used to get away 5 days a week and now he's at home and he sees the madness. Yeah, new appreciation. Yeah.
And trying to juggle, right? So I think there's a lot more empathy from, from
Agree.
businesses as well. And over the years, it's gotten so much better, right? Initially, I mean, we didn't even talk about being a working parent in the workplace. It was one of those things that, when my kids were small, I never talked about it because it was like you never wanted to be seen as less than your counterparts, right? You never wanted anybody to ever have the impression that you could not give as much time, effort, energy,
Wow,
as somebody
that's a
else.
profound perspective, honestly. Yeah,
That's
yeah.
literally how I felt a lot of times. So I would never really talk about, oh yeah, I've got to, get home and I got to do dinner and baths and homework and, all the things that we know is kind of that second shift. I used to call it
Right,
the second
right.
shift, right? Because we do one and then we go to the other. But what I would say is I think being able to juggle work, family, career definitely is not easy for anyone. And I think that there's no, I get asked this question, how do you do it? And the thing is that there's no like, silver bullet secret sauce that, oh, if you do these things, it will always work for you. But I think, thinking about that, less about balance and more about harmony, right? We talk about work-life harmony a lot because it will never be 50-50. It will, some days you're going to be 80, 95%
Right.
work, right? And then you're going to give less to kids and family. And there's going to be other times when it's going to swing the other way. But I always think about, the one piece of advice I think I would give folks, well, two pieces. One is to make sure you prioritize the things that are really important to you. Right? We talk about that, the Stephen Covey, the big rocks kind of in the
Yep,
jar. I don't
yep.
know if you remember
The
that, but I love,
sand, yeah, the
yeah,
pebbles and
exactly. I love that. So for anyone who's listening, hasn't seen that, definitely go just look
Big
up
rocks,
big
big
rocks.
rocks. Always.
Big rocks in a jar and you'll find it. But I always think about prioritizing the things that are really important to you and getting those first. And then all the little stuff will fill in, right? Literally. The other thing I think I would definitely say that I wish I did better if I look back is I wish I had asked for help more often. I always felt like, oh, I have to do it all on my own. I can't burden anybody. I have to, kind of going back to that, not even talking about it, the
Yeah, don't
first
let them see
probably
you sweat
10
sort of
years.
mentality.
Exactly,
Yeah.
exactly. I would say probably the first 10 years of being a parent and working, which just happened to kind of coincide with a lot of the growth in my career, which is one of the challenges that, a lot of working parents have is the times when you're also raising children, potentially by, getting a home or getting a place and try to build that. You're also at the same time building your career, going from,
Exactly. That's
individual
you're growing
contributor.
kids, growing your career. I mean,
You're
talk
doing
about
both.
tension.
Yeah, you're doing all at the same time, right? So being able to just have, being able to stop and ask for help and let people know
At
when you
work,
do need help at
with the
work and
kids,
at home.
all the
I
above.
think all of the above, right? And don't feel like you're alone in the journey. I think that's really important.
Well, nowadays, I mean, I think you can crisscross the two, right? Where you can ask for personal help from, employee assistance programs and different things that we have going on that probably just didn't exist, 20 years ago when I was raising my kids as well, right? I mean, there probably was some support mechanisms, but to your point, we're in a
Very
new
little.
age of empathy from an employer's standpoint. And
Yeah.
it's unfortunate when we don't tap into that. And, I do my best as a frontline manager when in seat to bridge that gap and understanding, getting to know people. And that's the question here. This is a perfect example of the kind of style that
Yeah.
I would roll with is getting to know people and their kids and their background and getting that appreciation. And again, there's this, not every leadership team does that. While a company might, give lip service like we do to alignment, we might say that we're empathetic, but
Yeah.
really are our frontline managers, really doing that work. And I imagine someone like yourself who's been there, done that both personally and professionally, just naturally leads with the level of empathy when working with your teams.
Yeah, and I think that it kind of goes back to a little bit about that personality conflict when you're trying to drive alignment. One other thing I think is really important is to really understand again with your team that, as a leader, that your team is the same way, right? They have different values, what's important to them, how they want to be communicated to, how they best respond is going to be very individual to them. And so you need, as a leader, to be successful, you need to be able to tailor your leadership style and your communication style to be the best fit for each person on your team. I think that's really important to consider because you could say, oh, all working parents want these things, but it's not true, right? You may think that they want all these things, but maybe they don't, and that's not what's important to them, right? Some may rather just be able to work a different schedule or different hours. Some may want to have certain times off. Some may just want you to just treat them
Like everyone else.
like everyone else and just, right?
Exactly.
And don't make them feel, potentially like they're, less than or anything like that. So I think it's
Full
just
circle.
about getting to really understand your team,
Yeah.
just like
We
your
talk about
stakeholders.
personalization and outreach so much, but
Exactly.
there's so
And
much opportunity
relevance.
to personalize and be
Yep.
relevant in our management styles and so forth.
100%.
So I thank you for that. In that term, I want to bring it back to the RevOps professional discussion. We'll bring this home here in a moment, but two last areas I want to unpack with you is communicating our value as revenue operations professionals. So as you're growing your career, as you did for the
Yeah.
course of 20 years and working with great organizations, building big teams and so forth, you've had to communicate your value in this process. And the reason I want to connect the dots here is because so often people in this profession are laid off because the organization just doesn't understand what it is that they're doing. You made that clear to me when we were talking offline, and I mean that was a huge point. And we're seeing tech layoffs still around us. It's
Yes.
still taking place. So for those that are in seat as a revenue operations professional today that might be facing reluctance or some sort of skepticism, the resistance that you see when you're trying to implement or change the organization, how do they communicate their value without coming off braggy, but also aligning with strategic goals?
This topic actually comes up a lot because I think as operators, we're naturally, supporters, enablers, folks that want to see other people succeed, right? And we're not, a lot of times, we're not the one who wants to be in the forefront, the spotlight on us, hitting the gong,
Great
right?
point.
We want to be those enablers and we celebrate our wins by seeing other people win. The problem with that is that a lot of times that leads to us being very heads down. We do our work and we think that everyone recognizes and knows what we're doing by
We
working hard,
assume, right.
right? And the reality is that so much is going on. Business moves fast. There's lots of things happening that it's not always clear, as you said, what the value is that operations is bringing to the team, right? They might say, oh, yeah, they implemented that tool, or they, fixed our handoff process. They put together a rules of engagement doc, but they don't tie that back to the value in terms of how did it drive a business outcome. right? And sometimes it can be like two layers away, right? Or three layers away. But whatever your go-to-market goals are, those targets that your revenue goals that you have, everything that we do from an ops perspective should tie back to those goals, right? If you're implementing a new, even the handoff, right? That's going to drive better customer experience, net dollar retention, right? Just faster deal cycles, faster implementation. There's
Exactly.
all kinds
Right.
of that things. But I think from an ops perspective, you need to be thinking that way. You need to be looking at the company's goals, the go-to-market goals, and then backing into, okay, the things that I'm doing, because not only does it help you tie back to how you're driving outcomes and affecting the overall ability to hit those targets, but you're also helping yourself
Right.
prioritize, right? Because a lot of times you have 100 things, and I tell people if all 100 are important, then nothing is important, right?
Firefighting, right?
Firefighting, right? You're just firefighting, and you're not actually moving the needle. So being able to always tie back to your goals and understanding, is this going to help the company and help the team achieve their goals? Yes or no? If it's a big no, then you know what? That's deprioritized, right? And those are things that maybe are important, but are lower impact and lower effort. And so if you're always tying back in your mind, the other thing is to communicate that, right? And in the spirit of, this is how I get a lot of the ops folks that I talk to, because they're like, I don't want to bring attention to myself. I don't want to brag, right? Kind of what you mentioned and alluded to. But this is how I get them is in the spirit of driving alignment, communication, transparency, you should be communicating what you're working on and what's
Agreed.
happening, and keep everybody aligned, right? So in the spirit of communicating what you're doing, you're also tying back to those goals, the strategy, and then the impact. And you can't measure, what do they say, whatever this, you
Measure
can't
what you
improve what you
treasure
don't
or treasure what you
measure.
measure. Yeah.
So you have got to tie those back too. And it's incremental, right? We're not going to say, oh, we won these deals, but we can point to the fact that by implementing this process, here's our baseline. We improved efficiency by 1%, whatever. We increased, we participated and contributed to driving a shorter deal cycle by Y, right? Whatever those numbers are. Sure, there's other factors that come into play that helped also, but you need to be able to have some of those tangibles to be able to share, to just drive visibility into what you're doing, the impact. And as leaders, it's really important for us to do that on behalf of our teams.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Sales Consultant Podcast. If you'd like to support the show, it would go a long way if you were to write a short review on the listening app of your choice.